the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigo skunk apes, donkey devils, and benevolent space brothers. So keep it tuned right here. Joined in the studio by Shelley Wright, investigator Shelley Wright, Sam the Animal Steel producing, and Stevie Tombstone, who is, you've got a pretty much set up Asheville Base Camp, which is kind of exciting. You're working with some local musicians, putting some tracks down, like we mentioned, playing around the Root Bar and out at the barbecue spot. Moe's out in
Woodford. Yeah, I'm
out
there
in
on Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm going to play this Saturday. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I've been here hiding out and then
what is
out
it with
the hills? Now I'm in town a little more now.
Is it like a Stevie Tombstone requirement that if you hang around very long, the city has to start with the letter A? It's Atlanta, Austin, Asheville.
That's right.
Any AAA. Chance you might might
Auburn,
end up
New
in
York. I've been hanging out in Auburn, New York too.
Yeah, so maybe it's a superstition. These cities that start with A. So if you live in a town or city that starts with A, you may be seeing Stevie Tombstone in the near future.
Watch out, Albemarle.
Yep, Apalachicola, I got your number. How many of y'all's in there?
Yeah, we mentioned something else. I was talking to Shelley, and just the comparison. I like talking off microphones because sometimes we get into some weird tangents that are worth bouncing back to on the mic. And I was telling the story that I told on the air a month or two back about having a dream about an article of clothing and then seeing that article of clothing when I went out into the world the next day and not really knowing what to do with that information. But
right.
Shelley had kind of reinforced my opinion that just shows you that you're on your path.
Yeah, you were exactly where you were supposed to be.
It's like a way marker.
Exactly.
A premonition, what you might think is just a pointless premonition, is just like a way marker. It's just like a milepost.
That's it.
Along life's highway.
Yep.
And by telling that story, Stevie said he had one to match it, and it was exciting to me because, like, I started out the show talking about the Tombstones album, Preaching, Praying, Guitar Playing, and you're wearing a distinctive hat on the cover of that album, Stevie.
I'm wearing a black hat.
Right.
On the cover. And it's kind of funny how I got that hat. I was having a dream one evening, or early morning rather. And I dreamed about somebody shooting at me. I happened to have a black hat on in the dream, and they missed me, you know. But it was close, and it put a hole in my hat. Dream continued. I got up the next morning, and I walked out on the front porch to let my cat out. And there was a black hat on the front porch with a hole in it. So I put it on. I kept it for years. I don't know what happened to it after. It just sort of
became your trademark.
Yeah, you know? For years. Yeah. And my son gave me last year for Christmas, I don't think he's seen the album cover, gave me a black hat for Christmas.
First black hat, first new black hat you've had since you found that one on your porch, probably.
That's right, yep.
And was it a black cat that you were letting out of the house when you found
it? It was.
Yeah. How did I guess that it was a black cat and a black cat? No, you hear black cat for bumper music on Speaking of Strange here. I've rather adopted it. Shelley, you're a cat lady. Do you have a black cat?
I don't have a black cat. I've got a gray and white cat, and then I've got a redheaded kitty.
I've got a black cat, and her name is Bitey, and my wife says that she has anxiety issues.
And that's why she bites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was kidnapped. I kidnapped Bitey when I was delivering pizza some years ago. She was from a litter of ferals that lived in the woods next to a customer's house. And I said, I noticed your mama cat out there in the woods has kittens. If I can catch a couple of them, can I take them home? I said, take every damn one of them.
Yeah.
Get them out of here. So with a little persistence and a can of tuna, I lured the little black kitten up by a fence there. And when she stuck her head under to eat the tuna, I caught her by the nape of the neck and put her in a box. And I was going to catch two, because I think if you get a couple kitty cat siblings, they keep each other company.
They do.
But this yet as unnamed kitten, black kitten in the box, was the only one I could catch, because the other ones were smart enough. They realized that when I had abducted their sister, we don't trust this guy anymore. So none of the rest of them would come up and stick their head under the fence. And so I took her home and put her in the backyard, and she took off for the woods. We've got a patch of woods behind the house. So she took off, and I thought we may never see her again, but we started to leave water and food out there for her, and she would come around at night, and I would hear this poor little lonesome kitty cat crying at night. And like the next night, I heard a screaming and caterwauling going on out next to the porch, and I thought, oh my goodness, something has got a hold of that kitten. An old tomcat has gotten a hold of that kitten. I felt so bad, and I went out, and she had climbed up the steps and tried to climb under the gate at the back of the porch, and had gotten stuck, got her head stuck under the gate.
Oh.
And so I had to put my hand in front of her and hold the little kitty cat and ease her back under the gate. And when I got her head back under the gate, the first thing she did was sink her teeth to the bone in my finger. And so I had to hold my breath and put my hand down on the ground and pet the little kitty cat until she let go. And took off for the woods again. But so that was one of my first bonding experiences with Bitey, and that's where she got the name Bitey. And now she's like 5 years old, and she's still cantankerous.
Yeah.
My wife is like her only friend. And if I want to hold her, I have to trick her. I have to either go put some food in her dish or act like I'm going to open the door to let her out and then grab her. And if at that point she'll give in and let me hold her for a little while and maybe even purr. But Bitey is, like my wife says, anxiety issues.
How old is Bitey now?
Bitey's about 5. And
probably
has
not
anxiety
likely to
issues.
Grow out of her anxiety
issues. No. She's had a litter of kittens, and then we had her fixed. Well, that's pet stories. You folks, mostly Asheville folks around here, you like animal stories, because we love our animals. We love our pets here around Asheville. And who doesn't love a black cat named Bitey?
Yeah.
Stevie Tombstone, I bet you know a few animal stories. You told a good one about when you and your buddy Will were playing at a club and a dog relieved itself on stage.
Yeah, it sure did. It was a large dog that looked like it couldn't be told to do anything, really. So he had to endure it on stage.
In the middle of a performance, the dog,
yes, sir,
dog was up there just
and,
adding his
theatrics. I do believe that was, that tells you how long ago this show was. It was Drive-By Truckers before they were the Drive-By Truckers. They were called Adam's House Cat. They were so.
There's the cat connection.
Yeah,
Drive-By Truckers used to be Adam's House Cat,
that's
but
right.
In this case, it wasn't the house cat that was taking a dump on the stage.
It was like a Doberman, Rottweiler.
Oh, and I think it does good to just offer the name Will up to the universe,
yes,
because
sir.
Will was a great guy. Will Platt played bass with the Tombstones, and you and Will basically grew up in that Atlanta scene, kicking around together.
Yeah, he moved over from Birmingham in the 80s, and then we ended up hanging out together by accident and started playing music together.
What was the speed metal band Will was playing in?
They were called Threshold of Pain.
Did you see? I dug up.
I saw that. Yeah,
I dug up the audio for. I didn't mean to hurt you. I meant to kill you.
That's right.
Threshold of Pain, thrash metal band, and Stevie prevailed upon the guys from Threshold of Pain to let the Tombstones do a version of that one.
I decided it needed new lyrics, and
so you kind of turned it into a country song, that's Americana.
Right. That's right.
I love it. That remains among the unreleased gems, and not likely to see the light of day, I guess, because some big money people have shelved that product. But along in the early 90s, 91 or so, I guess some of the Sony people had an interest in putting out a Tombstones album.
Well, we had a deal with, I guess Sony owned Relativity, so we were on Relativity. We had a multiple record deal.
Cut an entire album's worth of stuff.
We cut a couple albums worth of stuff, and then I quit the band.
got the mojo. Got the mojo power. Was that one of those songs? That's a Tombstone song that I haven't heard in at least 20 years, and I ran across it.
That's been recorded multiple times in different incarnations.
Got the mojo power. And I was telling Shelly a couple of weeks ago that there's a little place down in Atlanta that she needs to network with, because she's got a little metaphysical boutique out in South Asheville, Nevermore Mystical Nevermore. Arts. And you got love kits, spell kits, and incense and all that sort of stuff. And what was the place in Atlanta?
Rondo.
Man. Rondo Sales is
That's
still
right.
going. Rondo sells like the little cardboard cylinders full of powdered incense and the candles and all that sort of stuff. And Rondo's been in business, I guess, since at least the 30s or 40s.
Wow.
And you say you used to go and wander into Rondo on some mind-bending substances and really be amused by all the weirdness in there.
We were amused by all the weirdness everywhere.
And I think most listeners to Speaking of Strange are amused by the weirdness everywhere. Hang with us, folks. Enjoying our chat with Stevie Tombstone here on Speaking of Strange.
That I'm still alive. Yeah, I thought I'd use 9, but I must have been high. Forgotten and shot at, but never denied. I'm lucky that I'm still alive. Lucky that you love me still. Yeah, I know you're my rock, but I've rolled you uphill. Aside from my pride and unshakable will, I'm lucky that you love me still. That I'm not jailed. Walked the edge of the ledge, now I stand here to tell. The harder I ran, yeah, the farther I fell. I'm lucky that I'm not jailed. Lucky to be here tonight. Yeah, the evening's half over, there ain't been a fight. It ain't about who's wrong or who's right.
I'm lucky to be here tonight. Yeah, we're lucky to be here tonight. Yeah, we're lucky to be here tonight.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. And that was a nice little surprise. Stevie Tombstone performing Lucky live here in the studio. Thanks so much, Stevie. That's a heartfelt anthem, I think, for somebody who has spent a lot of years in the music business on the road.
Yes, sir. That was a gratitude list on a McDonald's napkin.
you can't speak much truer words than that. Like I was saying during the break when we were trying to decide what song can we put Stevie up to playing, I'm thinking every time I meet up with some of these old long hairs, most of us aren't long hairs if we got any hair left now, but some of these wild children that we used to run around with and the music we listened to and the stuff we put ourselves through, and yet here we are mostly in one piece, or at least on the right side of the grass.
That's right.
So Stevie Tombstone has been sharing some great tales from the road, and the tales of inspiration, tales of music. You run into some pretty amazing musicians over the years. We talked about Robert Johnson and the fact that maybe because the money people thought it was a good idea, but I think that a good punctuation mark on it at least is to look at it in the perspective of going down to Greenwood, Mississippi. And last week we did an episode about how Shelley and I up here in the mountains, we keep bumping into ghosts, the ghosts of Mississippi. We were standing over a grave having a conversation, and we looked down, and the woman's name was Rivers Brown. And for some reason, I told Shelley, I said, I'm going to go look up and find out what the story on this, because she was a young woman, died in the 30s. She's buried under a flat marker out there at a cemetery north of Asheville. I've forgotten, I would assume, by most at least. And I looked her up, and she was from down there on the Tallahatchie River. And then I had to tell the story about when me and a friend of mine were driving through Mississippi 20-some years ago, and I got to talking to him about that Bobby Gentry tune, Ode to Billy Joe. And whether that was based on actual events or not, still it kind of created a legend of the Tallahatchie Bridge. And I started asking some of the locals around Greenwood, Mississippi, where was the Tallahatchie Bridge that Bobby Gentry was writing about? Mm-hmm. And finally ran across some guys in a coffee shop, probably at the same Shoney's, that didn't know who Robert mm-hmm. Johnson was. But one of the guys said, I think that was out at Money, Mississippi. And I thought, well, Money, you know, that sounds like a fine place, Money. It's got to be prosperous, right? You know, it's going to be on the side of the tracks with the antebellum homes and the palatial, you know, the white columns. Not so. When we found our way out to Money, Mississippi, we found a very dry and dusty, and frankly spooky little town. But when we stood on that bridge over the Tallahatchie out there at Money, Mississippi, I felt particularly haunted. One of the creepiest places I've ever stood. And Robert Johnson's ghost might be still floating over those cotton fields down there. And of course there's the legend about the crossroads. Was that something you heard as a young man, Stevie, the story about Robert Johnson being not a very good guitar player, and then he goes out, he vanishes for a short time and comes back, and he's the hottest guitar player the world has ever heard, and he must have made a deal with the devil. I think that's pretty much how the legend goes.
It was in my periphery of assumed folklore when you're growing up in the South, and especially if you study any kind of music at all, you know. And like I was exposed to it through other music that led me back to Robert Johnson. So
you kind of, there's a line in your song Greenwood where you I should be able to cite the exact poetry even, but there's a line in there that suggests that there are elements of the Robert Johnson myth that sort of defame the man, don't respect him as a living human being. They kind of elevate him, or maybe it's in a sense that people want to elevate him to some sort of hero worship, but in a way they kind of lose track of the fact that here was a living human being with all the sorts of you know, aches and pains and misgivings and trial and error, but somehow,
well, selling your soul to the devil could be could be, you know, exchange for experience and sacrifice, you know.
Right. Eating from the forbidden fruit.
Well, you know, maybe he left and went out there and lived hard and traveled and studied and gave up part of himself to study, you know, or you inadvertently, you know. So maybe that's the part that's, it was more of a figure of speech.
Yeah.
But you never know.
Selling your soul to the devil, in a sense, is giving up the easy life or the freedoms. I think a lot of, in one sense, people want to portray the Delta Blues men as sort of savage or primal or even ignorant.
No, they weren't.
But the fact that's what I'm getting at. The fact is, Robert Johnson, he was motivated enough to get out there. To he go to Dallas to record some tracks,
and like San Antonio, yeah.
Traveled all the way to Canada, played all up and down the country.
Well, he stayed out of Mississippi. If you notice, he went to where the racial differences weren't as, the margins weren't there, you know.
And sold a considerable amount of records.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically a self-starter. It wasn't like somebody discovered him and pushed him to make
music.
No,
there
was
a network of traveling performers, and they kept tabs on each other's acts. And, I mean, there was a conscious, once it began to take off, I think, and there was more than a handful of people doing it, there was a conscious craft to it, you know. And
that's the Robert Johnson I think you start to see when you really go back and look at that, the Blues Network.
When I traveled with Johnny, it was his blow off, man. He knew the last song that Robert Johnson ever recorded, and he and you were hoping he would play it.
It's just
I never heard it.
He knew,
and I carried a suitcase every night.
So. Oh man! Yeah, and some legends, and some.
So we'll leave it all. And it's a good place to. You don't know, you know. That's what I'm saying. The beauty of the situation gets lost in the lie, the whole thing that perpetuates it anyway, you know. So.
But Robert Johnson was certainly just some. Not some backwards dum-dum. Mm-hmm. You know, if they want to portray him as some sort of Neanderthal or caveman, he certainly wasn't that. He was a sharp guy, he was driven, and he was brilliant. And so that's a good point to leave Robert Johnson. But it's always good to evoke his name and pretend that you know a little something about the man anyway. You feel an affinity for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, now I do.
We'll be right back. Speaking of strange.
songs. I wake your mother, she's sleeping there, right by your side. In her right hand, a silver dagger. She said that you can be my bride. Your daddy is a handsome devil, got a chain 5 miles long. On every link, a heart has dangled of another woman. He's loved and wrong. Silver dagger, I fight in vain.
This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock, your host. On this weird roller coaster ride, joined in the studio by investigator Shelley Wright, Sam Steele, and tonight, Stevie Tombstone. Thanks again for playing Lucky for us, Stevie. That was my great
pleasure, friend.
And folks, stay apprised of what Stevie's doing. People can get on Facebook and follow Stevie Tombstone. Spelled just like it sounds, Stevie Tombstone. If they follow you on Facebook, they might hear that you're playing over at the Root Bar on a Sunday afternoon. Or you're playing down at Moe's and Woodfin, or just wherever the wind takes you, right?
Yeah. I'm in town working on some music with some folks and playing here and there while I'm doing that.
What would it take to get a Stevie Tombstone production credit? If anybody's recording or working in the studio, if they hit you up, would you be keen on just going in there and turning a dial and switching it back and getting a production credit?
Well, I know a gentleman that's just sleep on the couch and get production credits. but not here in the mountains.
No, everybody plays something around here.
That's
even
right.
If they play tin kazoo on your album.
I like it.
But we heard Silver Dagger. That was kind of a British garage version of Silver Dagger. Sometimes there are people, speaking of Strange, listeners that always jump my case about getting derailed by rock and roll or music trivia. But I think music trivia kind of flows on the same weird sort of web as a lot of this sort of paranormal stuff. If only because of the inspiration. And when you start talking about folklore and ghost stories and old traditional songs and murder ballads,
yeah,
I think that inspiration kind of flows on the same grid, maybe.
It's part of our culture, you know?
Absolutely. It's an undercurrent. But that Silver Dagger, there was a version of that that was captured over in Madison County in 1916, when a lot of these folklorists and song catchers were going out and recording the music and the songs for the first time 100 years ago. They recorded an early version of that over in Madison County, out from Marshall. And I just discovered that that British band Pentad did an obscure version of it in 1965. I'm always trying to combat the British invasion by saying, first the British stole from us before we all started imitating the Beatles. Now, there's no denying that after the Beatles broke, every teenager whose parents would cough up enough money for them to get a guitar wanted to have a band. It was one of those explosions. We saw a similar explosion, I guess, when the Ramones were responsible for a similar explosion, maybe, American punk bands. Nirvana was responsible for a similar resurgence, but it's almost like every generation has a popular musical explosion that motivates young people to get creative again and start making rock and roll music. And I think maybe I date myself or I start sounding like an old guy when I say I don't see where the next one's going to come from. But I think that maybe that's the magical thing about it. You never see it coming. You know, you never know when the next big wave is going to hit. But
it's already there.
It's already, you know, somebody's already on their board paddling and they're going to catch that wave. And maybe like we were talking during the break, me and Sam were talking about when the White Stripes played here. That would have been late 90s, right, Sam? When White Stripes played Be Here Now? Late 90s or early
2000s? I was talking prior to that. I was talking White Stripes at Vincent's Ear.
That's right.
Yeah, that was 97.
Yeah.
Maybe 98.
And not a whole lot of people knew what was going on. I mean, people from the Detroit scene, people that had kind of been watching the Detroit Cobras and Elvis Hitler and Goober and the Peas and some of those.
Greenhorns.
There were some interesting things going on. Oh, yeah. Detroit's always been a great rock and roll town. But we're talking about the White Stripes. And then it seemed like, bam, within a few years, Jack White was just like a phenomenal influence on guitar rock.
So I hear.
So you hear.
Yeah. Made it from Vincent's Ear to Stella Blue to Be Here Now. Then I just lost track of the guy and heard he's been doing some things.
That's what they say. Anyway, Stevie, Murder Ballads and Songs. And amazing to hear earlier in the show that one of the Tombstones' most memorable songs, Nobody, was basically inspired by a melody that your grandmother would sing to you. How influential have those old energies, those old music energies been to your songwriting? And do you think that that you can ever date those things? Do you think that this is the sort of music that will reach 200 years into the future?
I think people are already doing that kind of stuff now, man. I mean, traveling around, I see. I see people. I see a general interest, you know, and people like story songs too. So, I mean, when I first started doing them, it was a little for shock value. I was playing on the bills with lots of bands that my band wasn't really like, but we had some of that factor in common. But the difference was I had a connection to it, kind of because of my growing up in the South, or you know, having that in the culture already. So it was a matter of probably of ignorance, really. I just went back to the nearest source of inspiration whenever I was trying to write something like that myself, which was what I absorbed growing up, you know.
Right. And you say you try and tend away from feeding off of what your contemporaries are doing. You try and keep...
I'd like to try to.
Try and keep that a blank.
I still...
But you did a tune over at Root Bar when I saw you a couple times back. I swing by there. I catch those Sunday afternoon Root Bar sessions whenever I can. It's great having you around town. But you did Box of Pine.
Yeah.
Who is that?
That was a song that was going to be a Tombstone song, and it never became one. And I was producing some tunes for Gary Lindsay. He was in that band Ashjack, Hank III.
Right.
And I was producing a session for him in Austin about over a decade ago. And that was one of the songs. Like, you would sound great doing this song. And so we did it in the studio, and it kind of caught on the same kind of way Nobody did. It became sort of Gary passed a tape on to some guys from Nashville Pussy, and then Motorhead got a hold of it, and then so everybody was playing it for their walk-on music. Nobody knew who I was, but it was fun because I wrote it and then gave it to my friend and watched it get knocked around.
Okay, I don't guess I realized when I saw you playing that over in Music Hub Oteen a few weeks ago. that we call it slow teen sometimes. When we saw you over at Root Bar playing Box of Pine, I don't guess it registered that was one of your songs, because I went home and was looking it up and found a very well-produced version of a guy with a very gravelly voice.
Yeah.
Singing it, and I can't think of the name of that artist or the band.
Black Eyed Vermilion. Yeah,
that's a pretty cool track. Maybe we'll pull that one up and use it as a bumper during the Dark 30 Hour, because Black Eyed Vermilion, Box of Pine, and Box of Pine is a Stevie Tombstone song, huh?
Yeah.
It suits you. I thought maybe you had heard that and say, hey, that suits me. I'm going to borrow that. Of course, you do.
I used Gary for my alter ego for a while. I was like, I tell you what, I'm going to write this. And then you acted out. So it was kind of fun.
Black Eyed Vermilion. Yeah, great, great stuff.
He definitely has a character, you know, in that band. And
Just being friends with Stevie and kind of conversant in music, he'll drop stuff on me once in a while. You dropped the Lime Spiders on me a while, because you played with those guys way back in Atlanta, and that was a band out of Australia.
Yeah, they were great.
The Lime Spiders. The Beasts of Bourbon. I had to go home and check out Beasts of Bourbon. There's so many great bands in this vein, this sort of bizarre underground thing. You're talking about Ralph White's coming through town. People need to keep an eye out for Ralph White. He played fiddle for the Bad Livers.
That's right.
One of my favorite sort of psycho hillbilly banjo. I don't even know what to call the Bad Livers. They were formerly Killbilly, I think.
Yeah.
And those were Texas guys, right?
Yeah.
Ralph White's a good friend of yours. You've played around with him a little bit.
Yeah, I knew I was closer to Mark, you know, in the 80s when pre-Bad Livers, and then I met Ralph when I was making 7:30 a.m. years ago, and we've stayed in touch ever since, and played and traveled and recorded together. So
maybe interesting to just leave people with this thought as we go to break, that Stiv Bader recorded a version of Nobody.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool if Stiv Bader records your song.
It was Stiv and Johnny Thunders and Dee Dee Ramone all in the same. It was pretty. I didn't even know they did it until like 10 years after.
That's a threesome, right? That's the
Whores of Babylon.
Good stuff.
Or the Whores of Babylon.
Maybe we'll dig that one up for SOS listeners also.
There you go.
Folks, thanks for listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the final valuable moments of hour two. Speaking of strange, here in the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina, in the company of Stevie Tombstone. And Stevie, we'll let you off the hook real soon. We've been having a good time.
I've been having a great time.
We've been just absorbing your energy, your positive vibes here in the studio, and we hope that speaking of strange listeners We'll check out what's going on. Maybe there's just a few people out there who know your musical legacy and don't realize you're back in town, but they need to get you back on their radar. Did I tell you?
I could owe them money or something, man, you know?
Did you know, I might have told you about it, after I did a show on Asheville FM, my rock and roll show, Thursdays, Riffin', I was playing some Stevie Tombstone tracks, and I was playing some of the older stuff, too. I think it's when we were getting ready for that Irish House gig. And a guy from out in Weaverville called me and said, man, I haven't heard of Stevie in years, but I was part of that scene down there. And Will Platt used to rent an apartment from me, and he started dropping names and everything. So you never really know who's out there. You got some friends up here in the mountains, and I thought that was pretty cool. Who's the guy that came out to the Root Bar that you told me is the man responsible for taking you into the studio to record Tombstone?
John Blackwell, former NASA employee.
John Blackwell.
Fired for trying to contact the Pleiades, and then he... I made a record with him after that.
John Blackwell is the guy who...
He's a genius.
Got you guys to record Nobody, huh?
Yeah, he used to do, he worked for the Grateful Dead back in the day, I think, and he was a audio engineer in Atlanta at the time and a scientist.
Right, and he's out in Bat Cave or somewhere.
That's right.
Around here.
That's right. He may not want us to tell anybody where he is.
Oh.
In case the Pleiades wrote back. But.
Yeah, so you never know who you're going to resonate with out here.
That's right.
In the mountains. And Stevie Tombstone, you'll be hearing more from him. Now that you know the name, now that we've spent a couple hours with the man, you're never going to forget. It's on your radar. It's going to start showing up everywhere. That's how synchronicity works, Stevie. We just plant that seed, and now people aren't going to be able to ignore you. Everybody listening out there tonight is...
I don't need to play any more shows then, do I?
No, you can just sit
hang
back
out,
and people will find you.
Cool. Finally.
Just wait for those checks or money orders. No, on a serious note, we might as well tell people where they can tune in and listen to some of your music.
.net, StevieTombstone.net, .com. It's a large portion of it's on iTunes and all the other corporate conglomerate purveyors of music, digital music. And you can order stuff off my website. You can put it out there to the universe, and you'll probably get it back.
The best way to do it here while we've got him, and I mean you travel. I mean, so even though we're talking about there's now a Stevie Tombstone base camp sort of established here around Asheville, and people might be able to catch you out at Moe's.
That's right.
Or people might be able to catch you over at the Root Bar
in
Oteen. That's the best way to do it. Catch Stevie playing a local gig, and you've usually got your strong box full of CDs for sale, right?
I travel with my wares.
That's the way to do it. That's the genuine effect.
You got any koozies?
No koozies, man.
No koozies?
No inflatables or anything?
No inflatables, no koozies.
Damn.
Just hard listening products.
And out of vinyl for the time being, right?
It's sad, but it's also joyous. I'm sold out of vinyl.
You did press a 12-inch album of Greenwood.
Yeah, we did a couple of limited pressings of that. It sold out. And there's talk of another vinyl release coming out next year or later this year.
Greenwood is a great collection of tunes. Lucky is on there, mm-hmm. which you played for us earlier. That would be a good one. You also... kind of put together a collection called I Wish I Was Back in Vegas that came out, 6 months or so ago. But that collection also has some later era, kind of like a Texas Tombstones, because you got some guys together when you went out to Texas to play some Tombstone stuff.
Yeah, when I was living out there, I was doing the solo stuff, and I was playing in dance halls and
I had a five-piece honky-tonk band at that point in time, and then I got some calls to go do some shows out in California, so we released all the old stuff, and I ended up, it was supposed to be a short-term thing. It lasted 2 years, the reunion of people that weren't really in the band. But the young folks loved it, man, and it was a great time.
All right. Folks, we've been blessed to have Stevie Tombstone hanging out with us here in the Speaking of Strange studios at WWNC 570, the Talk of the Mountains. Check this guy out. Keep him on your radar. Get on the wavelength. Coming up, the Dark 30. So for all you sensitive types and the little kids, we're done with you. Go to bed. We'll be right back.